Well, thank you everyone for coming. It's very nice to see so many faces. And it's quite something to be stared by I don't know how many eyes. Quite powerful. Still, thanks for coming. The title of my talk is Encounters with Fear, Death and Beauty. Through the course of this talk, I'm hoping I'm going to give you a sense of what I mean by that, what those encounters have been. It's going to be fairly personal, but I'm going to try not to indulge too much in myself. Okay, just waiting for these people to sit down. Welcome, come in. Okay, so I don't know if you've been to the, what's it called, Glade, there we go. Yes, throughout the talk I might ask you things like that just because English is not my first language and then I might ask you for help. Yeah, so over in the Glade, there's a little mandala with some really beautiful, powerful words that go like this. Transient are all compound things, subject to arise and vanish. Having come into existence, they pass away. Good is the peace when they forever cease. Those were the words of, they are in the Parinirvana Sutta, so the discourse of the last days of the Buddha. And actually it says that these words are spoken by a god, by the king of the gods. Won't go into that, but it's some other consciousness just after the Buddha had died. And then a disciple of the Buddha says the following. No movement of the breath, but with steadfast heart, free from desires and tranquil, saw the sage come to his end. By mortal pacts unshaken, his mind, like a flame extinguished, finds release. I find that really powerful. So free from desires and tranquil, his mind, like a flame extinguished, finds release. The craving. There you go. Yeah. So I find that image quite powerful. So those words, kind of imagining the Buddha, imagining somebody who we are told has attained perfection, if you like, has attained the uttermost, highest state of humanity, if you like to put it like that. He's dying. He's just died. He's passed away, but this is not an ordinary death. He is free from any craving. He's free from any attachment. And just like a flame extinguished, completely finds release. There's something very beautiful about that. And there's also something quite painful, I think. Perhaps for me and maybe for most of us. Because when I think about my life, if I died now, I'm not sure if I'm just going to find release. I think I'm still going to try to cling on things and great suffering is going to come from that. And I think that might be true for most of us. So that makes me think about, well, I need to get ready. I need to prepare for death. I've been thinking about this talk quite a lot, and it has taken me back to when I was a teenager, not that long ago, and just having this sense of, this vague sense that I was going to die at some point, and that everyone was going to die, but it was like a gentle sort of whisper, it was like an overcoat over everything, but rather transparent, a bit like light shining or something, you don't, in a way you don't see that it's there, but it's kind of affecting your every move and your every aspect of life. It's like a little whisper, just all the time, like death, 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 or something like that. It went something like that, like you're gonna die, you're gonna die, you're gonna die. And what that meant, the effect that that had on me, was one of, at times it was quite paralyzing, quite frightening. And it came with a sense of, well, what's the point then? What's the point of everything that is ahead of me? So a teenager, this sense that life was ahead of me, it seemed quite pointless, like, I'm gonna die anyway. And then looking around with a teenage arrogance, at other people, quite judgmental, thinking, oh, they're not even living their lives properly, and they're not, like, they haven't got any meaning either. They seem quite empty, the lives of people around me. Even healthy, kind of fairly happy people. There was something kind of missing. And then something happened when I was 15. So I was very close. I'm very close to my friend back in Mexico called Gustavo. And we used to spend ages, most of our time, whenever we were not at college if we were not at college, we were together. It was a very intense kind of couple of years of intense friendship and companionship and lots of conversations and going through things together, kind of growing up together. He was a year older than me, so he was 16. We went on a holiday with his family, mum and dad. We went to the seaside and it was lovely. His mum was a really beautiful woman in her 30s, very healthy, energetic, very strong. And quite frightening sometimes as well. So this kind of a woman with like full life, if you like. So we went on a holiday and then we came back home. And then I think it was only a few months later, she suddenly went into hospital. I didn't know why. I still actually don't know why. So she went into hospital and I went over with my friend, just be with him. And I think only after a couple of days, she died. And I remember that night, I really wanted to stay overnight with my friend. Like, I really felt like I needed to be with him. And he said, oh, don't worry, brother, you go. And his dad said, well, yeah, it's not necessary. It's okay. It's like, she's going to be fine. And then I got a text from my friend saying, it's all over. Thank you very much for all your help. I'd never felt such sadness as that day. Just yesterday, I was really feeling. I had a good cry, actually. And I felt sad for a number of reasons. One was, so I just described briefly, I think Jacqueline was her name, a woman in her 30s, full of life, etc. And then, almost overnight, she was gone. And I didn't know why. So I felt sad because of that. That kind of utter mystery, like, where is she gone? She was here, now she's not. But then I felt a deeper sadness because of my friend. Like, his mom died. Like, the woman who gave birth to him, the woman who gave life to him and nourished him and brought him up, etc. She just died, and he's there, 16-year-old, without his mum. So that was another layer of sadness. And then there was the layer of sadness of not being with him, I really wanted to hug him, I really wanted to be with him so much. And then there was a deeper layer of sadness that made, you know, this, I was thinking about this whisper of death imbuing everything. It was no longer a whisper. It was not so much a shout, but just like a kind of uncompromising statement that she had died. I'm gonna die. My mom's gonna die. My dad's gonna die, and everyone around me. So I just took it in, and I cried and cried and cried and cried and cried, and I couldn't, I've never cried like that before. At the same time as being very painful, there was something very liberating in that experience, actually. There was something about having that whisper finally coming into focus, like, this is what's going on. This is what's happening all the time. This latent potential for us to suddenly just go. And again, this sense of, well, what am I going to do with my life? I need to search for a way to live more deeply, and to live in a way that I'm ready for that to happen, because it could happen at any point, and to me and to my mom as well. So there was a lot of reflection on, oh gosh, my mom's gonna die. So that led me on to what the Buddha calls the noble quest. So he talked about, we can either search for things that are subject to change, aging, and death, or we can search for things that are not subject to death, the deathless, he called it, rather mysteriously, the deathless. I didn't know any of these back then. I just knew I needed to find something. By that time, I sort of thought, there's no point in pursuing. I'm not going to get any satisfaction from any of the things that I'm offered in society. In a way, I kind of given up hope in studying and working and etc. Although I was still studying, but there was, at a deeper level, there was this kind of disenchantment, if you like, with how life was presented to me, with what I knew life was until then. There was a kind of like, actually, I'm not interested in that. And I was very fortunate. I was very, very fortunate to find the Mexico City Buddhist Center. I started a journey then, a journey of discovering a way to relate and to face death, that was very radical and very liberating, even more liberating. Even though at that time when my friend's mom died, there was this slight sense of release, slight sense of like, okay, this is what it is, but very confused at the same time. All of the other things, like, I don't know how to deal with it. I learned to meditate, and that was so fantastic. It was so amazing, because it was a tool that taught me how to be with my experience just as it arises. So a lot of you might know the mindfulness of breathing, the metta bhavana, very basic kind of meditation practices where you just sit with your experience as it is, and you just breathe in and breathe out. It had a really profound effect in me. So my first meditation course, I was doing the mindfulness of breathing. And then suddenly I dropped into a sense of, look, you know, you kind of chatter on your mind. And then there was a kind of deepening of just being in the breath, just fully breathing in and breathing out. Just that kind of immediacy. And in that immediacy of breathing in and breathing out, there was a reflection on the whole of life, if you like. That sounds quite grand, but there was like this rising and falling of my breath that was just reflecting the rising and falling of everything else in my body and everyone else, and the kind of the whole universe, if you like, a reflection of things are just like this, things are just arising and passing away. If you've been doing the mindfulness of breathing for ages and you know, don't get on with it, this is a like kind of secret kind of teaching on the mindfulness of breathing, kind of the secret aspect of the mindfulness of breathing. I'll just go quickly through it. In the first stage, you count at the end of the out breath, so you breathe in and breathe out, and that has the effect of focusing your mind on release, if you like. The more you just keep breathing out, count, breathing in, breathing out, and count. Eventually, you're going to drop into a different kind of way of perceiving, a different kind of way of experiencing your breath, beyond blah, 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 blah. And in that, this relaxing into things as here in my body now. This ache, it comes and then it passes. And then the second stage, you breathe in and things arise. And you perceive them arising. And in that arising, it's always changing. You're breathing, and there's not a single point where when you're breathing in that is fixed. It's just a constant arising, and then it goes back again. And then on the last stage, you're just aware of the whole experience of breathing in and breathing out. And that's when it comes into this sense of things arising and falling. So your breath arises and falls. And you can have a sense, when you're quite concentrated, you can have a sense of you are dying. You're dying and you're being reborn. You're dying and you're being reborn, just as you breathe in and as you breathe out. Free from attachment, in a way, that is a little exercise where if you just get quite absorbed in the breath, you don't need to think about it, you just experience it, and you're free. You, for a moment, you're kind of free from any chatter, any attachment to anything, and you're immediately experiencing life as it is. I found this amazing discourse of the Buddha, where he's basically saying, he asked his disciples, so how did you contemplate death? And then one of them says, well, I think that I only have 7 days to live, and I reflect on the teaching of the Buddha, and the Buddha says, stop that. That's not how you reflect on death. And then another disciple says, well, I reflect, I only have 6 days to live. Stop that. That's not the way. 5 days, 4 days, 3 days, 1 day. And the Buddha says, stop. That's not the way to reflect upon death. And one of the disciples says, I reflect upon death in the interval between an in-breath and an out-breath. And the Buddha says, yes, that's how you reflect upon death. And here is what the Buddha says. This is because all formations are entirely empty. They all become appeased. They rise and cease. They are all like a magical illusion that is without a true essence. Therefore, monks, you should give attention to the perception of death in the interval between an out-breath and an in-breath, so that you will be liberated from birth, old age, disease, death, grief, worry, pain, and vexation. In this way, monks, you should train yourselves. So again, I find it really interesting that in that interval between an in-breath and an out-breath, there's a possibility to experience freedom from grief, death, etc., etc., etc. Again, there's that sense, there's that this little gap when you're neither breathing in, neither breathing out. That if you're really quite concentrated, you can really let go in there. You can really be free. So yeah, this practice, the mindfulness of breathing. I learned it, I don't know how many years ago, 7, 8 years ago, not that long ago. And I just kept practicing it and practicing it and practicing it, seeing the value of it. So another thing about this quote, so it's often referred in Buddhism, this freedom from birth. And there's this conception that we are constantly re-becoming while being alive. But then also, when we actually die, there's this conception that we re-become again, or are reborn again and again and again. And if we don't free our minds, we encounter birth, which comes with old age and sickness and pain. Why am I saying all this? Oh yes, so we can see that as we live in our everyday life, we can see, if we pay attention to our minds, if we pay attention to our experience, we see how we're recreating ourselves again and again and again. We fall into cycles of being quite high and quite happy, and then suddenly quite sad and down and like lose in contact with meaning and value and beauty. So we go from all these extremes. And kind of the Buddha is inviting us to say, hey, go beyond that. There's a chance to go beyond it. I wanted to make reference to a recent film. So a ghost story is called. It wasn't very popular, I don't think. But it's basically, you'll recognize it if you go into a DVD section, or don't go into DVD sections anymore, do you? If you search online, a ghost story. Just basically a person with a sheet on top, like a classic kind of ghost. And it's basically, I don't think I'm going to give much away. I really recommend watching it. So basically this man dies. He's in a relationship with a woman. And he turns into a ghost. And just briefly after he dies, he sees this bright light. And he stares at it. And turns away and kind of goes back to where he used to live, and he spends decades there, if you like. I don't know, endless, more lifetimes in there. And the film is such a wonderful portrait of things kind of happening around. He just stays in that point, in that spot on Earth, and history just happens. The house where he is kind of is demolished, and he kind of goes into the future and into the bag. It kind of is a bit confusing. Kind of is demolished, and kind of then he goes back in time, and there are tribes there, and kind of things just happen, and he's still there waiting for his girlfriend to come back. That's all he's doing. He's waiting for his girlfriend to come back. And you get this sense of real sadness. It's like he had no other purpose in his life. Other than waiting for his girlfriend to come back, even though she just left him, basically. Though he seemed like a troubled man. He probably had many issues and she couldn't stand him. But all he was doing, he was just waiting. And in the meantime, there was all this happening. And again, you get a sense of the kind of utter meaningless of his being. He's dead already and he's still waiting there. Watch it. A ghost story. So I go back to training. So I started going to the Buddhist Center and started training. When came to the UK, so training in this discipline that leads to the deathless, meditating and going on retreat, meditating at home, practicing with other people I lived with, practicing at work, trying to practice as much as I could. This, as I was describing earlier on in the mindfulness of breathing, kind of as much as I could, bringing to mind that sense of death. With a sense of openness. Yes, there was a difference between death, being aware of death back when I was 15, to being aware of death when I was meditating, which was only 2 years later. And then as I've kind of gone deeper into practice, is there's a different sense of death. I'll go into a bit later on. But another way in which I describe the mindfulness breathing as preparing us to die. Being on retreat is very good as well. And I just want to share one particular retreat, a solitary retreat I went to in 2012, just before I went off to get ordained. I was reflecting a lot upon death at that time, and I wanted to make sure that I said things to people things I wanted to say to people I wanted to say them to. And just before I went on retreat, I phoned my dad, and so my dad left home when I was 15. Actually, oh gosh, a lot happened when I was 15. and I just wanted to tell him that it was okay. I knew how guilty he felt, and still, I think. But there was something about... I never had the courage to... Even though in my mind, I fully kind of... in a way understood that it was the best thing for my mom and dad to be separated. I never had the courage to tell them that, just to say, hey guys, you know how parents worry about the children. Now I have a child and I kind of understand. Yeah, one something I really wanted to say is like, it's okay, I'm okay, I understand it was the best thing. So anyway, I rang my dad just after reflecting upon that again and again and again. I was like, oh, well, yeah, this is one of the most important things I need to do before I go. I need to tell my dad that it's okay. So I did, I rang him and he cried. just told him that it was okay, that I fully understood and that he was fine. And then another thing I did while being on retreat, once I went on retreat, I just wrote letters to beloved ones, just bearing in mind, I wrote a sort of will. I wrote a will, like kind of writing my wishes, what to do with my body, what to do with my very few possessions, etc. I just kind of really tried to go through all the practicalities of dying and what to do after I was dead. And then I wrote letters to people I loved, just saying things. And one of the big things that came up was this question, do I regret anything? Do I have any sense of regret? And again, that's come up. And this is, the Buddha's teaching is so wonderful in this way. And so I'm practicing within the Theravada Buddhist community. It's so wonderful as well that we place such emphasis on like bearing in mind how you act and the effect that that has on your mind and on other people. And an emphasis on remorse and apology and making amends and all of that as a practice in itself is good because it gives you a sense of like peace of mind. But you can also see it as a preparation to death, to die. Again, because we don't know when we're gonna go. So if you constantly bearing in mind what do I regret and what can I do about it, it's like you kind of constantly having to be ready to kind of say, I'm sorry, ready to kind of say, oh, it's okay, I forgive you. But to really be in contact with that. So that's another strand, and something that I had to learn. Again, I talk in terms of training, I've been talking about in terms of training. So just as I had to learn to meditate, I had to learn to get to know the feelings of regret, and I had to learn to apologize, I had to learn to swallow my pride, I had to learn to kind of learn when I'm being stuck in myself and kind of I don't want to apologize because it's the other person's fault. But then that doesn't hold true. As soon as I think I could just die now, that just dissolves. And it's so funny because if I don't bring that perspective, I hold things so tightly and it's so painful for me and for other people. So death is a relief. Death is like, okay, I'm going to die. There's no point. Stop wasting your energy. Stop wasting your time and just forgive and just apologize. It's a training. It's a training that something I'm learning and I keep having to learn. I'm going to skip that. Okay, so what emerges out of this constant awareness of death and training? A sense of gratitude, love, and connection, and a sense of wanting to live by love and connection rather than hatred. And again, that's another part of the training that I'm kind of engaged in. The metta bhavana is very good for that as well. I won't go into the metta bhavana. So there's another meditation, a constant kind of visualization or reflection I do. So I've been talking about recollecting death, constantly bearing in mind that I'm going to die just as I breathe in and I breathe out, thinking about if I regret anything, how do I treat people, how do I act, And all of that is very well, but there's another dimension. There's another dimension to life, because if so, I went off to get ordained in 2013, and I at that point, just the day before my ordination, the retreat was so intense that I felt that I had in this life I had done what I had to do. And in a way, I felt ready to die. Again, it was another point where I wrote down in my diary, like, okay, today I'm going to die, and I'm ready. And I really felt ready. I really felt like I had done what I had to do, and I was ready to die. And I entered into the ordination space with that in mind. I have nothing to fear. I have nothing to hold upon. I have nothing. I am nothing, in a way. And I went into that space with that complete surrender and giving up. And I had to do that in order to take this precious gift that I was given when I entered into, I'll call it a cave, to this small space, a stupa. I had to die in order to enter that cave. And in order to receive this gift. And that gift was a vision beyond life and death, a vision that encompassed and gave meaning to every little thing in life. So I'll read you a version of what's called the Bodhisattva vows. Although sentient beings are numberless, I vow to save them all. Although delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to overcome them all. Although reality is boundless, I vow to perceive it. Although awakening is unexcelled, I vow to attain it completely. I don't really know what to say about this. It's a little bit like, okay, I'm ready to die. Say I'm dead already, but I'm alive. I'm dead, but I'm alive. So what do I do with this life? And this is it. It's like, there's no point doing anything else for me. There's no point pursuing anything else, because everything will come to an end. But this, this vision, is worth doing. It's impossible, but it's worth doing. I'm kind of lost for words here. Let me take a moment and listen to my child crying. I'll go back to the Buddha. That's how I'm going to link it. What was it? Yeah. No movement of the breath, but with steadfast heart, free from desires and tranquil. So the sage come to his end. By mortal pacts unshaken, his mind like a flame unstinguished finds release. So this is him dying. But there's the image of the flame. So while we're still alive, there's this flame. There's this flame that is still shining, even though it's completely empty. And while this flame is still shining, what's the purpose? Where should this flame go without, so that I'm not causing harm and I'm not causing myself regret, so that when I'm actually die, I'm ready? How do I live in a way that is so free that I can just die at any moment? And this is the Bodhisattva vows. That's what makes sense. That's the way to live my life, serving as many living creatures as I can, liberating them from difficulties, trying to understand reality. What is it? Trying to understand the mysteries of life that are ungraspable, yes, that's how I want to spend my time. Trying, my mind is so full of little alleys and dark passages and cravings and aversions, and they seem numberless. I want to spend my life overcoming them so that I can be more free to awaken and to help other beings awaken. So that is for me, that is the vision of life that goes beyond life and death. Like, even if I'm reborn again, if we take this perspective, that's all right, because I have this massive project ahead of me that requires many, many, many lifetimes. And it's okay, because I have this to get on with. This little paper. Yes, I'm coming to the end of this talk. And I hope this flame keeps burning, because there's a tiny flame over there that requires this flame to keep shining. And that's the last thing I'll share, actually, the birth of my daughter within this kind of perspective. So I have this aspiration to see all beings as my family, all beings as not separate from me. That's incredibly hard to do, though. Because it's very mysterious as well. So I was present when my daughter was born, and that was an amazing experience, because everything was there, even from the pregnancy. So there's complete uncertainty in a way, when somebody's pregnant, you don't know how the pregnancy is going to go, and at some level you kind of completely at a very instinctual level, kind of, you want that child to be born and to thrive, and you want your partner to be healthy, etc. So that is that deep desire for things to go really well. And then there's the emotional side as well. You kind of, your heart kind of starts to open. So it's that on that side. And then on the other side, thanks to the Dharma, thanks to the Buddha's teaching, there's this other perspective of, could all go completely wrong, and you have to be prepared for that. So in the pregnancy, and then on the birth, which was very, 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 very difficult birth, and so particularly on the birth, even though we have wonderful medical treatment and all of that, it's very unlikely for things to go wrong. Here, I felt like my wife was going to die, and I felt like my child was going to die, and I felt that I was going to die. So again, I had to be completely fine with that. I had to completely melt down, and at the same time be very strong. And it's a complete, in that moment, this moment of, yeah, of both. That's why I say everything was there. Like, life was happening, but also inevitably death was very much present. And then this little baby creature appears, and she's so fragile and so beautiful, this new life, that I know is gonna die, and that is dying already. Such happiness and such sadness at the same time, inevitably, and it could not be any other way. And that is such a lesson in how to be alive. That's a very strong reminder of, that's true all the time. Things are, I am born, you are born, everything is born. And it's so precious and so fragile at the same time. It's kind of, at the same time, it's ceasing. So it's, again, there's no other way, I don't find any other way of explaining it. but is complete. There's a sense of completeness. If you fully, in that moment, there was this sense of, ah, yes, that is life. Yeah, so baby Noura means light. She is a constant reminder, and now she is alive, and I have to bring to mind again and again. I have no idea how her life is going to be. I have no idea what she's going to want to do with her life. I have no idea if she's going to grow up. I have no idea what's going to happen to her. And yet, she's worthy of all the care, all the love, everything. Everything. She's worthy of everything. And so I have to keep reminding myself that everyone is just like my Noura. Every single one of you is like my Noura. You are completely and wholly worthy of all my respect, all my love, and all my gratitude even. So that's how I want to live my life. Thank you.